Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, West Coast win back in town. Adam Chera finally gets a Rising Star nomination. And Stephen May, is he the luckiest AFL player out there at the moment?
That was out of bounds.
I don't believe it. I see it, but I don't believe it.
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now.
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant. Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is...
Stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello everybody. Tuesday morning, which means it's time for this week's first edition of the Duff and Quarters podcast after another big weekend of footy. We're brought to you by Tab Touch. Glenn Quartermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times, joins me in the studio. I'm Mark Duffield, the senior football writer of the West Australian newspaper and Quarters.
Duff.
Big weekend of fixtures.
It
big
was.
Ramifications for the pecking order the top 10 places.
Wasn't it? And it's still, I reckon we've still got a bit to play out here.
We have.
It's amazing. One win, one loss. You can slide two or three spots in that logjam for the eight.
So GWS beats West Coast, they stay sixth.
Yeah.
They lost to West Coast, they slid to 10th off the back of poor kicking,
yep.
Probably.
Yeah, look, it was a very even game, which we expected. Could easily have won, but just poor kicking, particularly early, cost them. If they had a kick straighter, might have been a 2-3 goal loss to the Eagles.
And what we see, I reckon, often in AFL footy is that you can get away with playing a few kids if your senior players lift. And West Coast got massive games out of their skipper, Shannon Hearn,
yeah.
Out of Andrew Gaff, 41 disposals, goals. Luke Shuey, 12 clearances, 6 of them out of the centre. And Nick Natanui, 40-odd hit-outs and a couple of monstrous marks.
Yeah, and some contested marking. And that really made a statement, I think, at the weekend. And, you know, it was there for the taking at three-quarter time.
Yep.
And they kicked straighter. And they invented a couple of goals, a bit of magic here and there, and just GWS wasn't able to do that. And that's the difference.
Yeah, I thought maybe the two goals that sum up the difference in this game were the snap of Gaff in the last quarter.
Just a
half chance from about 35 metres out. When he threw it on the boot, you thought, well, this probably won't be a goal, and it goes through. A great effort from him. And the set shot by Jeremy McGovern way out wide in the third term from about 50 metres.
Yep.
Absolutely nailed it. And then you line that up against some of the misses from Zach Langdon.
Yeah, early set shots too from those angles. And it's not, and it is an accurate ground.
Yeah.
I guess unfamiliarity to a certain extent. But, yeah, those set shot misses that you'd normally nail really comes back to haunt you. It just shows. And that's the difference between 6th and 10th.
So what that means for West Coast, I think, still well and truly in the race for top two and certainly a possible, maybe even a probable for top four. Big game next week, of course. They play Collingwood at the MCG.
Oh, yeah. Big game. Probably won't get to train there by the sounds of it, given that there's a Saturday game at the MCG, which is a pity.
Yeah, beware of AFL administrators bearing gifts, people, because that was part of the trade-off with the new MCG grand final contract, and guess what? They don't deliver. They promise, but they don't deliver.
To be fair, I just can't see how a training session early on Saturday morning would do any harm.
No, it doesn't do any harm at all. It's a load of rubbish. It's an excuse. And really, it should have been absolutely written in concrete when that grand final contract, that lousy, stinking, unfair grand final contract, when that was issued, it should have been written in concrete that interstate clubs playing at the MCG got to train on it in the lead up to any game. And probably if they wanted to, twice before any final as well.
What did you think of some of the inclusions? Oscar Allen's debut, Venables gave him a little bit, and I liked Ainsworth's game.
I liked Oscar Allen's game. Ainsworth, I think, has great endeavour, great defensive work ethic, which is probably the reason why they're picking him ahead of Dom Sheed at the moment, although I noticed that Adam Simpson made a point of mentioning that Dom Sheed was available for this weekend's game, which is interesting given that he's probably been available for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Available means he's coming in. That's footy speak.
I thought Oscar Allen did a couple of really important things. There was a really timely mark in the last quarter, and there was a really good smother on Matt DeBoer in the first quarter.
Yeah, it looked like he belonged, which of course he does. But it's going to take time. A couple of instances there where he was just a little bit out of position, probably outbodied, and that's just to be expected for someone of his age and inexperience at that level. But I thought, it looked like he belonged. Lots of like there.
They still get good moments out of Willy Rioli, West Coast, too.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, and it's clever. He's just clever. He's inventive. And there's not too many players who can create something from nothing. And he's one of those.
Yeah, I think he has moments in games where we think, what were you thinking there, Willy? But he has other moments where you just know that in a 50-50 situation, he's going to do all right.
Mm-hmm.
And if he gets his hands on the ball, he's going to do something with it.
Nailed an important goal, too. And, he's a Rioli. So we shouldn't be surprised when those little bits of magic play out.
No, that's very true. Very true. In other games, obviously, quarters, big loss for Fremantle in Darwin.
It was a shocking game. And look, as Ross Lyon pointed out in the post-match, they were very lucky and the scoreboard flattered them because they could have been 50 down at quarter time. And strangely, they were sort of in the game late. It was bizarre, but... It wasn't a great night for them.
No, it wasn't. And he talked about being harder around the midfield. They lost contested possessions by, I think it was around 50. I think they need to be cleaner. And I think they need to find players who don't fumble. The thing I liked about Adam Chera, and while we're on Adam Chera, well done. Rising star nomination.
Oh, we're going to miss that one, I don't reckon, the AFL.
It's only about a month late. But anyway, there you go. They got there in the end. Adam Chera goes into the midfield, finds himself in fierce traffic, doesn't fumble. They have too many other players that do. And sometimes you lose contested possession, not because you weren't hard enough, but because you didn't get the ball clear when you had the opportunity to get the ball clear. And I think Freo's got a few of them, and I think they need to sort that out because they need to get their clean ball winners in and around the middle. That's one of their two big issues, I reckon. And, of course, the other big issue is finding a forward line that can convert opportunities.
Yeah, having said that, those 78 to 28 inside 50s, which I think is an all-time low under Ross Lyon.
But that's in turn a result of losing contested possession.
That's right, but you're not going to be able to have too many scoring opportunities if you're 78, 28 inside 50. So I don't think really too much blame on the forward line this weekend.
No, not this weekend, but obviously they need to find a couple of forwards and they need to find midfielders who will handle cleanly.
Yeah.
Because there is too many times when the ball gets into a Fremantle player's hands and should leave the congestion in Fremantle's hands and it doesn't. Because someone fumbles or delivers an errant handball or basically gives it back to the opposition. So, harder is important, but cleaner and smarter is just as important.
A couple of other interesting results on Sunday. Collingwood's injury list grows, but their reputation rises as well. Three-quarter time, I guess we're all fascinated with how it was going to play out. But just turned it on when it counted. Got the ball in the hands of a bloke called Dugowie and a few others. And Collingwood, I think now, the big discussion now is who's the second best team in it, because I think what we saw from Richmond only solidifies our argument that they're the best side in it. And then there's a little bit of a gap and everyone's fighting for the right to be who's the next best in it. And right now you'd have to say Collingwood, seven in a row, with Port not far behind. Sydney, I've been very bullish on them, but I'm starting to turn now because I think the weight of injuries is taking its toll and it's a really hard road for Sydney now, I think, ahead.
Yeah, unless Sydney can get Jack and Hanbury back up and going, then I just don't see how their midfield competes well enough.
Well, Hanbury hasn't looked right, and neither has Jack, for most of the season, if not into a part of last year. And I think Hanbury, I think he's out for an extended period now. McVay's going to hurt them from half back. I think Jack's going to miss a bit of footy too, and there are others. Melican's out now. I think Hanbury, it was interesting, a theory espoused last night was that... in the media, that it may be a good thing for Hanbury because he's obviously been playing under duress for too long and now he doesn't have to. Now he can have a little bit of a breather.
So this is osteitis pubis, is that what they're talking
about? I think so, yeah.
So I just don't see what the point was of having him out there.
Well, you're a chance. You're in the top four, you're a chance. You know what it's like. You're a team that's in the premiership window you're just going to roll out your best guns if they're available. If you, by hook or by crook, you get them out there.
Quarters, football clubs fall for this all the time. And there are two things. One, Dan Hennaby running around has probably delayed his return to full fitness and maybe even extended the time it's going to take for him to return to full fitness. And the other thing, what is the message you send to your second-tier players when you've got a bloke in the condition that Dan Hannabury's been in, running around? I'd say he's about 60% fit, Dan Hannabury.
If that.
And you're saying to your 19, 20, 21-year-olds playing in the NEAFL, this guy's only 60% fit, but we still think he's better than you.
I reckon, yeah, they are saying that. What they're saying is this guy's been an absolute champion of the club, and he has been a great player for Sydney for a long period of time, and they're saying he's earned that right.
I reckon that is, it is the biggest load of rubbish. You know how sometimes we talk about footy clubs and how some things about the AFL are fantastic and some things are just sham professionalism? That is sham professionalism. The notion that a guy 60% fit, and I don't care if it's Barry Cable, Polly Farmer, Dennis Marshall.
I wouldn't mind a few of those 60% fit,
Brian
actually.
Brian Peake and Gary Buchanan all rolled into one. If that player is only 60% fit, he doesn't belong on an AFL field, particularly not when he's a midfielder whose whole game has been based around gut running, which is what Hannabury's game has been based around. They've tried to turn him into a tagger. I went to the West Coast Sydney game at the SCG a couple of weeks ago. Dan Hannabury tried to shift Andrew Gaff off the drop of the ball in a marking contest. Now, if both were at full fitness, who would you back in that marking contest?
No, yeah, you would back Hannabury.
Well, he couldn't shift him.
Mm.
And basically, Gaff just stood his ground, Hannabury moved about a metre, and Gaff took the mark.
I think the game's changed. It's much faster now, and there's more required. There's more stamina required. There's more endurance required, and you can't get away with it as you used to. And I think you get found out pretty quickly.
So the rumour has been for some time that he has osteitis pubis, and osteitis pubis is a unwieldy beast of an injury because it can disappear quite quickly or it can linger for an extended period of time. Generally speaking, if it lingers beyond a certain period of time, you know that the only thing that will fix it is either, I think there are some forms of surgery they can do to ease the inflammation, and the other one is obviously rest and different management in terms of how you manage the player. Clearly, I reckon about a month ago, they could have made the call that that was what Hannabury was going to need. And if they'd have done that then, I wonder whether they would have had a player in the finals. Now, I reckon you'd have to seriously doubt that Hannabury's going to be there for him in the finals.
Yeah, it's round 16 going into round 17. So there's probably just enough time, but it's very close.
So you take that, the way they've handled that, compared to the way GWS handled Josh Kelly. So Josh Kelly had a sore groin after about round two and was sat down. And I reckon Josh Kelly spent 3 or 4 or maybe even 5 weeks not playing, and now he's running around. He wasn't great on the weekend. He got tagged. Seen too by Mark Hutchings.
Yes, it was a good effort by Hutchings.
And Hutchings got 4 to kick 2 goals. Yeah. But Kelly's back and playing reasonable footy.
You look at Dean Prestia at Richmond too. Richmond gave him an extended period out, backed themselves to get him right. No VFL, straight back in.
Yep.
And just melded into that Richmond unit really well, as we know they do. So.
And my point is that the positives of not playing an injured player and getting him right and giving game time to a young player who may grab the opportunity, it may even be, if Dan Hannabury had missed 6 weeks, you might have had to give 3 young players opportunity, but one of them might have grabbed the opportunity. And you would have said to all of them, we're backing you to play in Dan Hannabury's place because you are fitter and better prepared. Instead, they've said to him, hey, he's only half fit, he's a cripple, but he's still better than you.
Yep.
And some of those guys will get really cheesed off about that. And some of those guys, in terms of a belief perspective, won't recover. And they'll be less than the players they could have been throughout their whole career as a result. I just think it's nonsense.
Yep.
So what did you make of your boys in the win over Western
Bulldogs? Great. Yeah, look, it was a really impressive third quarter. Best footy they played in a couple of years. against a side that I rate at the moment. Really interesting two factors at play. One was Johannesson was the real danger for Hawthorn in the first half, and they locked down on him more in the second half. I think Harry Morrison had a bit of a spell on him. But Luke Bruce, it was the player I wanted to raise, because he kicked six goals, set it up early, brought other Hawthorn players into the game like Roughhead and Gunston, particularly in the third quarter. I think he's kicked over 350-odd goals now, Bruce.
Luke Bruce has played eight seasons of footy.
And if you look at his year-to-year...
He's never kicked less than 30 goals.
Amazing record. And sometimes you can get lost a bit in those Hawthorn Premiership teams where there's so many guns. He didn't let them down in any of those games, and any of those big games. And he'd be well in all Australian considerations now, Luke Bruce. And... He really stood out. He was the match winner. Look, I like what I saw. Hawthorn's got a good draw, so you'd expect them to play finals.
Yep.
If they don't play finals, then they're clearly on the wrong track. But I think they're on the right track. They've got a way to go. Could surprise maybe for a week or two in the finals. They're not a flag contender, but really liked the effort on at the weekend, and you know, well deserved win over a pretty good opponent. What about my big one over the weekend was Geelong's win, and I know Sydney's a bit banged up. Geelong's intrigues me. The last 5-6 years, they tend to beat sides above them and lose to sides below them more often. It's a really strange setup at Geelong at the moment, but I know we. I've been really bullish on Geelong all year, but with Scott Selwood back in the side and they're playing a smaller forward line now, I put them now as I'd say an outside chance to be one of the very few teams that could possibly upset Richmond should they go deep into the finals. And I put Port in that bracket too, and obviously I put Collingwood in that bracket, and that's just about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't put Port in that bracket yet. I'm a bit the same as you with Geelong. One, I think for Geelong to threaten the very best teams in the competition, Scott Selwood has to play.
Yeah.
And they just have to make room for him, because it's, you know, three phases of footy, as Alan Jeans used to say. You've got it, they've got it, it's in dispute. Geelong, as we saw the previous week against the Western Bulldogs, weren't good enough when the other team had the ball, because they have a lot of... I heard Joel Selwood describe Tim Kelly on the telecast on the weekend as a pure ball winner. They've got a lot of pure ball winners, haven't they? You know, Dangerfield is a bit like that. Joel Selwood's a bit like that. Gary Ablett's a bit like that. Kelly's a bit like that. Duncan is an accruer of possessions. But what do they do about applying pressure to the opponent when the opponent doesn't have the ball?
Interesting that. Yeah, that is a comment worth making. Their team defence isn't bad, though. If you look at their scores against, they're right up there, if not the leading team in the competition, so to score against. So they're not doing too much wrong. And I just like the fact that they've got a smaller forward line. Now, their big concern for me has been their attack, how they're going to score enough to win, with some contribution from the midfield. But I just reckon they've turned a little bit of a corner. And I'm not saying they're going to win the flag. I'm just saying that they're more in the conversation than they have been.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit more bullish on Geelong the last couple of weeks, even with the loss to the Dogs. You know, they travelled last week. They need to start beating teams below them more regularly. You know, those upset losses that they suffer. But, you know, they're not too far away.
Yeah, but what is the major source of scores in the AFL?
Well, it's midfield.
Turnover.
Turnover. And
turnover
from your halfback.
How do you turn the ball over? It's pressure. I don't think they apply enough pressure. So, yeah, they can get back and prepare for another team's forward 50 entries and defy them and not let them score. But to me, unless you are applying enough pressure in the midfield to turn the ball over, your forward line doesn't get enough good looks at it. And I think if they had a midfield that was prepared to apply more pressure, I think their forward line would. And the other thing, if you turn the ball over closer to your goal as the other team is trying to exit defensive 50, then, of course, you know, you get the ball. There are probably three of your players out and loose, and all you got to do is hit one of them. I think that is why their forward lines malfunction. And, you know, their back line, well, they have a good back line defensive system, don't they? But I'm not sure that their midfield pressure is at the level it needs to be without Selwood.
It's a really interesting watch this space, Geelong. They really intrigue me with how they're going. And the other one is Collingwood. I'm not sure what the latest is on their injury status. Looks like they've Hoskin Elliott. I'm not sure what.
Yeah, so he got his knee banged up, and the other one was Majcik, who looked like he did a pretty...
So there's a couple of forwards coupled with a few other injuries. So it's just... And they've lost more top-end players than anyone, yep. Collingwood, but they're second.
Yeah.
And, of course, they are one of the teams in that short bracket. I think seven in a row, great effort. They've got some challenges ahead of them, as has Port. So, you know, really, what a setup to finish this season we've got ahead of us.
So how did you rate Michael Christian's performance this week?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you who I'm feeling sorry for all of a sudden. Well, not all of a sudden. Is Higgins. He's like he's the punching bag of the AFL at the moment. I think May is very lucky. Jordan Lewis, that's probably a fine at best. But Jordan has a history of these things. But I didn't think there was a massive amount in it. I think May can consider himself pretty lucky.
Pretty lucky.
Mm-hmm.
He's flattened him from behind when the bloke wasn't looking, and that's not a suspension. I mean, seriously.
Well, I think the other thing that frustrated people, and it has for weeks now, is the protected zone. And we saw another couple of clangers at the weekend.
Yeah, but that's a rules thing, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. I'm not saying it's a Michael Christian situation, but. We could go over the May incident. We could go over the inconsistency of the tribunal, but we'd be sitting here for hours because we've got a long list of them this year.
I just don't see how hard it is to look at the Stephen May incident and say that's got to be a week.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you.
You know, and in fact, I reckon Stuart Dew would have been thinking, well, I hope he gets a week just to teach the probably. Silly bugger that not to do that again. It cost them a goal. I think the ball got shifted a significant distance for Higgins to kick the goal. And I don't see how you look at that and not arrive at the conclusion that has to be a week.
I agree.
Just back on Hoskin Elliott, looks like might miss a week.
Okay, that's good.
But good news. No great structural damage.
Well, that's good news. That's good news for Collingwood and the competition, and probably good news for the Eagles.
He probably won't play. I'm not sure, though, conversely, that West Coast will get Darling, Kennedy and Lacroix back this week.
Possibly one of them, though. They're not going to get all three. I would have thought, by the sounds of it sounds like Barris will come back at the other end.
Barris sounds like he's ready.
Sounds like maybe Darling, but not Josh.
That's what Adam Simpson was saying. Certainly someone I know reasonably close to the Eagles suggested it was more likely to be 2 or 3 weeks for all three of them. So we'll watch that one later in the week. This is the club that did have Nick Natanui playing next week for 6 months last year.
Okay.
Coming off his knee reconstruction. That was, well. So.
But just on the protected zone, Duff, I know, I like the rule. I like what its intention is. And occasionally you see it play out and you're thankful for the penalty that's incurred. But, you know, just the common sense rule again. Needs to be applied. You can't award it to a bloke just getting. Well, I mean, was it Hanbury? Who was it that was penalised?
Well, I'll give you the example. This is how ridiculous it's become. In Richmond's game against Adelaide, that was the Friday night game.
Yes, it was the Friday night.
Dustin Martin stood in the protected zone 2 metres to the side of the player with the ball and guarded the mark
and smothered it.
No, he didn't smother it. He just stopped the player from playing on. So the whole idea of what the rule was supposed to do, which is stop that player from stopping the sideways movement of the ball, he absolutely epitomised that action and the umpire called play on and no 50.
Yeah. There's some real inconsistencies.
And then we saw three, I reckon, in the North Melbourne Gold Coast game, which were completely ineffectual incidents where they paid the 50. And then we saw the one in the West Coast GWS game where Stephen Coniglio had to get from behind Jack Redden and stand the mark. And that technically is 50 metres and they paid the 50 metre penalty. And the notion that in our game a player is not allowed to get to a point where he can stand on the mark and stop the player from playing on, that is rubbish.
Yeah, I think we're almost getting to the point where the third player will be just stopping. We're on the spot and looking at the umpire and saying, where should I go? Where can I move? Well, because I'm afraid now to move because I'm going to get pinged. But I'm when you blow the whistle and there's a player incidentally around the contest, he's got to move.
Yeah,
it's just how he gets away. So I think they're very confused about where to run.
So
very
confused. If you're Coniglio on Sunday, and we're reading the rule as in if you come from behind the player and stand the mark, it's 50. So you have to stand behind him and wait for him to play on. Now, Redden, knowing that Coniglio is standing behind him, just waiting for him to play on so he can tackle him, he would just stand there as well. So you'd have two players just standing there, which is a really great look for the game, isn't it? It's nonsensical.
You know, the other thing that really intrigued me, I was listening to Phil Davis last night saying that defenders don't understand the rushed rule. We don't understand it. We're confused. And they showed some examples. We've seen examples of it where you can see players are really confused about it. Just need a bit of clarity on that.
Well, I think they either need to accept that they're never going to pay it, or they make it more like deliberate out of bounds where you really can't rush one.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know my thoughts on that. I just think that we've got to the point now. If it's out of bounds, last touch takes all grey areas out of it.
Yeah, yeah. What about
when a player deliberately knocking it onto another player? Well, then it's a different situation.
Would you be happy to have that as clinical and brutal for rush behinds?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would. I just think it'd add a new dimension to the game. If it's one rule for everyone, I don't mind it.
The Defenders Union's going to line. They're going to line you up in the Hay Street Mall. They're going to put you in a stock and throw tomatoes.
That's all right, mate. It would be great with 1 point to go, 10 seconds remaining in a grand final. Imagine it. Imagine the theatre.
Yeah, I guess if it's a rule, then
it's a rule across the board. You have to. It's across the board. I'm coming around to that way of thinking. Actually.
It would make for some exciting goal line scrambles, I must admit.
Yep.
Although we have them anyway, because the defenders, as you say, they don't know the rule and they think they can't when they actually can.
Yeah, it's some fascinating stuff goes back there, that's for sure.
How concerned are you about Carlton? They're pretty feeble against Brisbane.
Brisbane were pretty good, though. Geez, they're playing well, Brisbane. And another six to Hipwood, too.
So Brisbane, we feel, are on the turn. They're headed upwards. Maybe not that far this year, but certainly next year they'll be in a position to push a fair way up the ladder.
Got a great nucleus of a great midfield developing, good forward lines, good defence, lots of like up there.
And hats off to the club, big tick for having the courage to go and get Luke Hodge.
Yeah, he's been great, yes. And, you know, there's a lot of arguments for Gold Coast, and I agree, I think Gold Coast Carlton should look to do the same. Whoever's out there, I'm not sure if McVay's the answer at Gold Coast. But I think we'll see a lot more of it now.
Who around the competition would you see a player coming to the end who would be a suitable candidate to go to, say, Gold Coast, Carlton, as the senior marshaller, on-field teacher?
So that's a good point. How old is someone like a Harry Taylor?
I don't know whether he's a great marshaller. I think he's more just... I mean, you've got to remember, Taylor played alongside guys like Corey Enright, Darren Milburn for a long time. These were Matthew Scarlett. These were pretty good players and pretty good organisers of a back line. So Hodge, almost from 2008 onwards, was the leader of the Hawks. Well, he was the leader of the Hawks, whatever area of the ground he was playing in, wasn't he, really?
Yeah, and it would still be, obviously, a very handy player at Hawthorn, but I think we're seeing the redevelopment at Hawthorn back line with Sicily now, the marshal down there, and doing a great job. You can see the method in what they've done.
Yeah.
It's just been a great move by Hodge. Really interesting point you raise. I'm just racking my brain for defenders who could move on. Like, Sydney McVay has been the one linked with Gold Coast.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's injured at the moment. You'd want to make sure his body can stand up to it. But he would be a perfect fit.
Yep.
Should his body enable him to do that? I'd hate to see another Malceski situation where it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We'll definitely see it happening.
Okay. Off the back of the Luke Hodge thing.
Yeah, I think so.
So how worried are you about Carlton?
Look, I'm not as worried as some. I guess if you looked at that game and you saw the ease of some of the Brisbane goals, I think there was one particular goal where it was like a practice session. It was kick to kick. It was shocking to watch. But It'd be very frustrating to be a Carlton supporter. They do have some injuries. I really firmly believe they're heading in the right direction. They need some top-up talent. They probably need some experience in there. You know, footy can change pretty quickly, though. And I know when you go out and you get flogged by Brisbane and, you know, it's the Lacocious Cup and all that sort of stuff. But I still have faith that Carlton will be okay.
For mine, it's not the Lacocious Cup, by the way. I think, having watched the 18s play last week, I think it's the Isaac Rankin.
Yeah, I think Adelaide are pretty keen to. Lacocious is number one on their list.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. They might be moving some players out to get him in.
If I was Adelaide, Isaac Rankin would be.
Yeah, I like him too. You know my thoughts on him. I really like the look of him.
I mean, what does Adelaide need? Adelaide are gone, by the way, after what we saw against Richmond.
Yeah, that's fair.
They can't get there. But what do they need? They need some X factor around the midfield, don't they? And forward.
Yeah, and this kid, I'm not sure how much midfield I'm sure he can.
Yeah.
He's a really clever and ready to step straight into AFL level,
absolutely.
I think. Lacocious, geez, talented big bloke, though. And when you see them, you just think, it's a hard decision to make.
Yeah, absolutely. I would still be leaning towards Rankin.
And I guess Lacocious, being an Adelaide boy, there's a real appeal there too. Obviously Rankin is as well. That's, I guess they're bullish on both, but we'll see what happens there.
Quarters, before we go,
yep.
Hats off to a bloke named Joe Morabito. That's Morabito, Murabito, not as in Anthony Morabito.
Mm-hmm.
I, being the idiot that I am, left my hazard lights on, because when you go to the stadium,
yes,
you have to turn your hazard lights on to drive around the perimeter so you don't knock any pedestrians over.
Okay.
I left mine on, came out, very cold, late-ish, no battery.
Oh, no.
Flat as a pancake. Joe was there with his kid having a kick of the footy around the oval before they went home, had a pair of jumper leads, so hooked him up to the car and started my car up for me.
Well done, Joe.
So well done, Joe.
Well, have we got 2 minutes for a quick one?
Yep.
This is a classic Quartermain story. Years and years ago, VFL Park, Saturday night grand final. I think it was Geelong playing in it. I was writing for the Geelong Advertiser. The night before, someone had smashed my rear window in my car. So, and I had to drive from Geelong to Waverley. I was living in Geelong at the time.
Been a bit chilly.
And on the way, I picked up, I don't know why, but a friend said, "Pop round, I've got something for you," and gave me this huge bucket of coleslaw. Right? So I put it in the back of the car, no back window, went to the grand final. And I was very late filing because there's a lot of stuff to file. Anyway, as I was leaving, there was basically no one left in the ground. There's no one there. And I went to go out the turnstile and just got stuck in this turnstile. And I was thinking, oh, no, those big metal turnstiles.
Yeah.
I'm going to be here all weekend. Because Waverley's out in the middle of nowhere. And I am screaming at the top of my voice, help, help, help. Some cleaner, thankfully, found me and somehow extracted me from it. And I was panicked, and then I had to jump in my car that stank of coleslaw with no back window, and it started raining and it was pouring in. I had to drive back to Geelong. Wasn't a good night. That's how I roll.
And I can tell you, listeners, that he's had worse nights than that, and we just can't share them with you. Thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be back on Thursday with a full wrap-up of the tips for the next round of fixtures. Of course, critical game for West Coast against Collingwood, and a big game for Fremantle trying to get a bit of bounce back against Port Adelaide at home. We'll talk to you again on Thursday.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.